Interruption. Things appear to be okay now. Let me make sure that the mics are muted for everybody. So I'm hearing a little noise here. Mute audience. All right. So apologies for this. There was a little challenge on my end. So welcome and happy Friday, everyone. So before we get started, it is an open call. So everybody's welcome here. I see a lot of external attendees, so it is primarily for partners and primarily for customers. And there's also internal Microsoft folks here. So please feel free to use the IM window as we go. This is meant to answer some of the questions you have and all of the questions you have if it is possible to. I'm seeing a question here about configuring ExpressRoute. We'll try to answer that question further. The goal here is not necessarily to answer, if we have some NDA things, please do not ask. We're not able to answer in a public call NDA information anyways. And the recordings will be posted at the URL below, so aka.ms/mna-ch9. And everything is posted at aka.ms/mna. All right, so here's the typical format. We try to run this every 4 weeks. With different kinds of session. Today is a little bit of a mix between those two. We have partner with us, A10 Networks. We're going to be presenting a little bit later in the call. And we also have somebody from engineering who is going to be presenting to us something that's been announced at Ignite. And there's myself who will be presenting a little bit of an Ignite overview, an Ignite 2017. So that's our agenda for today. So I think it's a very packed agenda. So I will stop talking about the agenda and actually go through it. Feel free to send questions as we go that are related to what's there. I know that there's a question earlier, Jimmy, if you want to try to answer it. Otherwise, I will look at it a little bit later. So I'm assuming most of you haven't gone to Ignite. Ignite was really an awesome, presentation from the networking team at Microsoft, probably from other teams. I didn't pay attention to what was happening in other teams as much as I did on networking. But that's just to give you an idea of what was announced there. So I will try to speak through most of these things, not in its intimate details, because we clearly do not have the time to go through these in details. But that's a lot of things. So one of the things that's super exciting, I guess, for us is the announcement of availability zones. And the things that I'm announcing here and I'm talking about here are not necessarily GA. The availability zones are not GA. And the availability zones is, I guess, a concept for those of you who have worked or been exposed to AWS. You would know what that is. So it's a fault-tolerant, isolated kind of things, typically in different buildings. Where within a region, you are able to have things that are in different building, or more accurately specify that they are not in the same facility. Previously, they could very well be deployed, so it's just a logical reconfiguration that has been done in a way to allow these things, to allow resources to be deployed in some of those. So some features, some networking features, will be made aware of this, like load balancing. AZ aware VPN. So that means that if you have a VPN gateway, the VPN gateways is always a highly available configuration. So what that means, and that there's two VMs that are underneath that VPN gateway. So it means that there will be one in one availability zone and the other one will be in another availability zone, such that if something would happen, well, at least not all services would be impacted, and certainly the VPN would still be able to work. Same goes for the app gateway and the ExpressRoute gateway. Now, it only works in US East US 2 and West Europe. But as you know, most services eventually, we have a rollout cycle. So more zones and more, not zones, but more regions will support this in the not so distant future. The other, I think, super exciting thing that we've been announcing is called VNet service endpoints. For those of you who have had more, other conversations with us privately might have heard other names. One of the ways it was called, it was service tunneling. So you might have heard this. But so VNet service endpoint, really what it does is it extends the VNet to multi-tenant services. Like the ones that we're announcing it with is storage and SQL. I see on the on the right middle about of the slide that there is some writing that's overlaps. This is Azure Storage / SQL, and on top of this, it said US West. I forgot to arrange this. Apologies for that. So the goal of this thing is really to allow the services inside of a virtual network to privately access some services like storage or like SQL. So those services, they were kind of open to the internet, and now with this service there, they can be closed off to be only accessed from very specific IPs. So you can access only storage when you come from a specific IP from on-premises, or you can access it only when you come from the front-end subnet of that particular VNet. So you have that level of granularity. So I see a question. Okay, so that's that will be for you, Jamie, I think. So the goal of this is to close your services like SQL and like storage to the rest of the internet and just only open it to your VNets, sort of making this service part of your VNet in a way. And all of the logging that happens on the storage and on the SQL side uses the private IP of your machine. So if your client is at 10.0.1.5, the logging, if you looked at the logs on Azure Storage, you would see 10.0.1.5 as the client IP, right? So it is, I think it really secures the thing. It's available in preview in some regions. You see them on the screen. Presentation will be made available to you. And yeah, so feel free to try it out and see what you think. And we want feedback. That's how we, you know, we develop and we improve our products. And hopefully that's going to be super helpful to you. I see as services like storage move towards our zone redundant. Yeah, okay. So Jamie, thanks for answering this. Yeah, we have some this little animation here where the VNet service endpoint is exposing that IP address, and there is the little lock there that just says that you can lock it down to a specific subnet and allow this subnet to be able to talk and allow disallow the internet, for example, and the other subnet to talk to that service. So it gives you much more granularity and security. That works for SQL, that works for storage, and in the future it will work for other things, other services. One other thing that will that has been announced is a load balancer standard SKU. So the existing load balancer becomes the basic SKU, which continues to work as it did before. And the load balancer standard SKU gives you more scale, resiliency, and is, I guess, easier to use in certain things, certain cases. When we say more scale, understand that the scale of the previous load balancer is still pretty decent. I mean, you could load balance to 100 VMs, which is decent. Now, in that case, you could load balance to 1,000 VMs, which is enormous. So it really depends on what your needs are. But there's more to it than just the scale. It will be availability zone aware. So you will be able to have a VIP or a virtual IP address that is resilient to the loss of a facility, or you know, something happens in availability zone one, it still can continue to answer to the same IP address in availability zone B. Whether that's a public IP or an internal IP will work. And diagnostics information is better. You know, for an internal balancer before, the logging information was extremely poor, I would say, and now with this one, we have a lot more valid information to take a look at. So that's for this particular load balancer. And one of the things that the load balancer is providing with, and for those of you who have been in this call other times before, might know that I do have a personal interest in high availability and in, you know, firewalling and these kinds of things, because it is my background. So it has been my background a while ago anyways. And, the challenge, I guess, we had with using virtual appliances in high availability settings was you know, there were a few challenges. Let's just say that. So the scenario we see on the screen right now has an active and a passive NVA. NVA stands for Network Virtual Appliance. And the way that that it had to be done is that you needed to use a user-defined route to point to the active virtual machine. And in the event of a failure, then you see on the screen Zookeeper clusters. It's a sort of a cluster that looks at the availability of the boxes. If the boxes can't do that themselves, because some can. iCheckpoint, for example, could. Cisco CSR can. There's other ones. I don't want to mention all of them, but it could be Barracuda. And some others could do it themselves. Some others needed a third-party kind of thing to watch for it. So it's kind of complex. And one of the way that we can fix this, or we could fix this, is by using user-defined routes that point to the load-balanced IP address. And that load-balanced IP address, it did work before Ignite. The challenge with it was that it did not work with, you had to create a rule for each TCP or UDP port that you would use it with. And it is, while it worked, there was a limit of the number of ports. And it was, quite frankly, I think it was annoying to have to configure, you know, the port there. And plus, there's a limit. So sometimes when you're a network administrator, you're configuring these things, you don't necessarily know every single application that's going to be used inside of your virtual network. Not when you build your firewall infrastructure. There could be new applications that spin up tomorrow morning, and then you're going to need to have the you're going to need to modify and add the new rules on the load balancer on top of maybe the NSGs that you have maybe put in front of your firewalls if you chose to do that, and on top of the firewall rules. So potentially, at least you had to add the rules in two places, maybe three. Now you will have to add them in only one place, which is your firewall, and maybe the NSG if you choose to have an NSG. So I see a question, is the any load balancer we have bidding for? Yes, it is that. So it is called HA port. I think it is great. I love it. And I think it will definitely make your scenarios so much better. And so much more scalable, because now you can just put more firewalls. Although we'll see that with certain NVA vendors, we'll see A10 with us a little bit earlier, demo something. I'm not sure you're going to need many in parallel, because one can do a hell of a lot, apologies for the word here, of bandwidth. And you'll see that it's super impressive. I was floored. And I'm hoping that everybody can do that in the future. That said, when you create your SKU, you're going to have to choose if you're going to use the basic one or the standard one. Won't drain that slide. If you need, you know, NVA high availability, you're going to want the load balancer, the standard load balancer. If not, then but there's fees for it. It's going to be charged a GA. I don't know what the cost will be, but that's what you're going to want if you want to put them in front of firewalls. If not, well, maybe the load balancer basic works. You'll see. So that's for the load balancer. So I think it's great, great things. Moving on, shifting gears a little bit onto, well, still in security. Network security groups, I assume if you guys have been using Azure for some time, and if you're here, you probably have. Then there's, you know, the NSGs are those equivalents, I guess, of ACLs that would exist on networking equipment. And those ACLs will provide you basic security. They don't do deep level inspection. This is a filtering mechanism. But still, a lot of our customers are happy with this internally. However, this as you see it on the screen, this has been like that for some time already. So what we're announcing, what we have been announcing, is new capabilities for NSGs, just to make them, I guess, easier to use and more scalable, right? Because you could automate these things. But you really had to have one entry per line kind of thing. So we're introducing two things here. Well, three, but one is on the next slide. So one is the service tags. So the service tags, as you see on the right, for example, underlined in green or greenish, is you see storage, you see Azure Traffic Manager, you see SQL.ECS. This is names that exist inside of our, when you create the rule, when you have that feature enabled, you do see those storage. You see SQL East US, you see SQL Canada Central, you see those all by regions. And we've done some groundwork to be able to repatriate that those IPs of those services into blocks that make it easy for you to be able to write these rules. So we've done all the work. Now you can use them in your rule definition, which will make it much easier. to control the access to these things. Because before that, you didn't know what the IPs for storage were. Now you have a tag for it. And augmented rules is the ones that are highlighted in orange. It is possible now for you to be able to have more than one source and more than one destination on a single rule. And then we're also increasing the number of CIDR range. Rules have been updated to 4,000 per NSG. So that definitely will make your lives easier as you use the network security groups. But I guess that did not necessarily answer all of the asks we had from our customers. So we're coming up with this new thing called application security groups. And application security groups is really, if you look at what's on the screen, you see underlined in orange, quarantine VMs. Well, that quarantine VM is really a tag that you can define like a homegrown tag, if you will. Like there's web servers, app servers, database servers, job boxes, and quarantine VM in this particular example. This is just a grouping of virtual machines that you choose, right? As a customer, you could say, oh, well, I have those 10 machines. I want them to be web servers, right? Those are web servers. And once you've tagged them this way, you can use them in NSGs, if that makes any sense. So it looks like, I guess, what you could have had and what I had seen in my previous lives as I was using objects definition and firewall configurations. And those are kind of the objects that represents a group of hosts behind them. So it will make usage of NSGs, I think, far easier and far more scalable. Less lines of codes are going to be required to create them. So I think it's great, great things, new things, which I think are going to be quite useful. So shifting gears a little bit on global VNet peering. So if you guys were using VNet peering before, VNet peering had to be done within a region. So it's VNet peering is really when you understand how it works, what happens is we're kind of connecting two VNets together. We're extending, I guess, the lookup domains of VMs in VNet A wanting to talk to VMs in VNet B. They don't go through a gateway, right? It's direct, machine to machine communication. So there is no gateways. There is no speed limits really between the two VNet peerings outside of the speed limit of your VM itself. If you have a small VM that has a NIC that can't go above X 500 megabits per second, for example, I think the A0, the smallest of the smallest VMs, I think that's about the limit. Obviously the peering won't allow you to go faster than this, but if you're using accelerated networking at 25 and we're announcing 30 gigabits per second, then you are able to do that 30 bits per second across VNets. Now, that's within a region. Now we're announcing global VNet peering. And you probably read the slide while I was talking. And it's the same idea, but instead of being constrained within a region, you could do this across regions. So the example we have here is between US West and Canada Central. So it is possible because those two regions are in preview. And this is why it's possible to do it between those regions. But we also have US West 2, and I thought we had one in Europe, but maybe we don't. But that said, you can only use them in the regions that are in preview right now, but it's the same idea. And the bandwidth constraints, and of course, the latency will be higher. The laws of physics, we haven't found any tricks around it, and I don't think we will for the foreseeable future. So you still have a lot of bandwidth between the two virtual networks. Purely on our backbone, you could use our backbone, and you still can using express routes for those of you who are familiar with what you can do with express route. But the global VNet peering will become, I guess, a privileged way to connect two virtual networks and network within the cloud as opposed to the cloud. So that's super exciting. I think it will enable and simplify a lot of topologies for cloud-to-cloud communications. So the other thing on the security front that we have announced is DDoS protection service. And hear me right, there was DDoS before protection. It's not that it's a new service, but now we're exposing it to our customers. And I personally am not very familiar with that service, so I can't go into the details. But we're giving you information in terms of what's going on for these things. And we will probably have a session in the future where we will be able to share more about that, more into the details. So other things we're announcing is IPv6 support for Office 365 and Azure Public Services. Azure Public Services are things like storage, like SQL, and a whole bunch of other services. We have Azure AD. We have some data factory services. So it's going to be by service kind of thing, but the fabric is allowing that kind of support. There is monitoring things that we're announcing as well. And I have a guest with us, Paresh, who is going to be talking us through the network performance monitoring of specifically of ExpressRoute. So we'll see this in a couple minutes. The other big thing, well, it might not appear to be a big thing, but in my opinion, it is enabling very interesting things, is the merger of the Microsoft peering and the public peering. This relates to ExpressRoute. For those of you who are familiar with ExpressRoute, ExpressRoute is really just the the connectivity between your different. I guess I forgot to push forward a couple times. So the ExpressRoute really is the connection between your network on the left of that diagram to the Microsoft network through the Microsoft Edge in some ExpressRoute location, and we have tons of them around the globe. If you've been on those calls, you have heard about those. Previously, we had two peerings. Now, what we're saying is we're moving the services to the other peering. So you still have the private peering. Private peering is the peering that allows you to connect to your virtual network. And you can have several virtual networks that are connected there. And now there's the Microsoft peering. And the Microsoft peering has Office 365, has Dynamics 365, and now is able to advertise all of your public services. And in fact, what it does is it advertises the public IP address space of the Azure data center. So what the side effect of this is that you are able to have bidirectional communications. Before that, it had to be from your network to Microsoft. Now it can be in both ways. And this will also enable you to, for example, encrypt natively your ExpressRoute connection. Because instead of an ExpressRoute gateway, and feel free to ask us for details and then go into calls with you specifically if you want to hear more about this. But in a nutshell, previously you needed you still could choose to. If you want an unencrypted ExpressRoute circuits, and for many customers that's perfectly valid, you deploy an ExpressRoute gateway onto your virtual network and you connect that to your ExpressRoute circuit, and that creates the blue arrow on the top, on the bottom, or I guess the middle right of that slide. Now, what's possible to do is instead of creating a VPN, an ExpressRoute gateway in your VNet, you create a VPN gateway, and you can run that VPN gateway over the orange arrow, which is the Microsoft peering. It ends up in your same virtual network, but it is encrypted traffic. So this is very interesting possibilities that are opened up on top of all other kinds of things that this actually enables. So. This is I've spoken about a couple of these things. Performance of VPN was increased quite a bit last year, and monitoring. We will be talking about this. We have some tools that are in Network Watcher. For those of you who know what Network Watcher is a collection of tools to see what's going on from a networking point of view in Azure. You can see what happens with your VPN gateways over there, and so I've talked about them. Peering merger. We're going to have like point-to-site VPN access. Used to be only possible with Windows. We're enabling macOS client and AD radius-based authentication. So instead of a certificate-based authentication, as it is the case now or has been the case before, or in addition to, you could do AD-based. I think that's pretty much it. We've spoken about load balancers. Got some details here. I didn't talk about Traffic Manager, but there's also things that are there, new things that are there with Traffic Manager. Real user measurements, just in a nutshell, is Traffic Manager is a global load balancer, for those of you who don't know, where you could have workloads in two different regions and a client just being given the right IP to connect to its closest region. Now, not only are we looking at how close they are, but we're looking at from a user in that location's point of view, how much time does it really take to hit the server that we think is closest? Is the server that's actually a little bit farther faster to respond. It could be the case. So we're getting those metrics and we're enhancing the service with this. And we're also enhancing the application gateway. So it is a packed session. Unfortunately, I don't have time to dig into all of these. So I have to move forward a little bit. And with that, I'll hand this over to Paresh.
Let me ask one question.
Yes.
One question about the number of concurrent VPN connections that are now available.
Yes.
What is that number?
I think it is still 30. I believe. Let me take a look. Jamie, can you while Paresh is speaking, I will take a look.
Thank you.
Hey guys, this is Paresh here. I'm a PM on the Azure Express.
Sorry, Paresh, you should be good. Apologies, I did unmute you. Okay, you're there. Paresh, can you hear us?
Yes, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Apologies.
Cool. No worries. Hey guys, so this is Paresh. I'm a PM on the Azure Express Out team. And we are really excited for a new offering that's coming up shortly. It's a network performance monitor for ExpressRoute. For people who do not know what NPM is itself, NPM is a cloud-based it's a monitoring solution to check connectivity or know more about your connectivity between your Azure deployments and then on-prem, like in your offices. So it is one of the monitoring solutions that's currently available as a part of OMS, Operations Management Suite. And NPM is already in production. It's been run in GA for a while for other workloads, but now we're extending it for ExpressRoute. So what you'd get out of it is you could be able to monitor loss and latency across your VNets. This is primarily what we're releasing right now is for private peering. So, you know, you can connect. You can essentially monitor connectivity, your latency, your paths between your on-prem and into the VNets. You can also troubleshoot point in time, so it kind of takes a snapshot of your state of the network connectivity at that point, and you can go back in time to see if there was any loss. You can even identify which path has had an issue. It will show up in the dashboard. So as you can see on the screen, you have a system state there, which would basically do an off refresh, and you could basically go back, set a time there to see what was the state at that particular point, and it'll also show you which path it's taking and what's the latency numbers there. So that's coming.
That's coming, and we have. Sorry, I'm controlling the deck. I want to make sure I advance at the right right rhythm. Is that the time to move?
Yes, that's good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we right now the way it does this right is based on agents. So we will be having documentation out shortly. We'll be entering a public preview very soon in the next couple of weeks, and there'll be a way for you to sign up for it. And essentially, the way this does the monitoring is you'll have to install agents on both sides of the house in on your on-prem machines and in your Azure VMs. And the agents will then specifically communicate on TCP or ICMP, depending on what you want to configure. Primarily, TCP is what will help identify all the paths and connectivity. So the agents are certified, are created in-house in Microsoft, and you know, this is how NPM normally works as well. And we have some customizations for ExpressRoute specifically to help identify which path is over ExpressRoute and not. So the agents, we do not support as of now Linux, because this is relatively new. So we want to start with Windows first, and Linux support will come eventually as we go forward. So right now you can still do endpoint monitoring via regular NPM, which is you could pick up a specific endpoint in Office 365 and Azure Storage, but the current solution does not show you if it's going over an ExpressRoute path, so it doesn't really cater specifically to ExpressRoute customers. That's coming in the future, where you, in the same solution, you would be able to essentially identify that, hey, this is my hop, to the service provider, and this is my next hop enters into the Microsoft network. So this will help quite a bit with fault localization, identifying where the issue is, and at least making your best bet in identifying if it's the issue is within the Microsoft network or before that. So the graphs that you can see right now, these are the snapshots taken from one of the other circuits, but essentially you would be able to see bandwidth utilization across your different peering, different your VNets. You would be able to see latency. So that's all goodness that you currently do not have. The key is you would need to install agents in each of your VNets so that only then it will be able to communicate. We'll have documentation which will explain how you can configure it and how you'll have to open up your firewalls and also some of the network security groups if you have to enable that communication. There is a standard port that we use for communication, but it is customizable, so you can customize it, and then you know there's a PowerShell script which you can run to open up the firewalls. So we'll have all that documentation available very soon. Let's move to the next slide. Yeah, okay. And the other feature that is already there is which would be setting up alerts. So you could set up alerts based on your bandwidth or something that, hey, if my bandwidth goes above a particular threshold, you can configure an alert via the NPM solution, and you could even do an email notification to yourself. So there are a few options available there. That way is you would be well aware of what are your thresholds. You can set the thresholds and you'll be well aware of what your usage is, and you can be notified in time.
And this integrates well, Paresh, into all other automations that exist inside of Azure. I mean, you could trigger a runbook that would start, network watchers packet capture somewhere, because you see that your bandwidth is going too high. You want to see if there's something wrong with some machine. You could start sniffing that machine and email you the trace if you wanted to. So there's a number of different things that can be done.
Right. Thanks for that information, Olivier. So what you would have to do is the documentation will have that information, but the OMS model operates on the concept of a workspace. So you'll have to create a workspace, OMS workspace, in the same Azure subscription that you're using. And you could still monitor an ER in a circuit in another subscription. You just will have to give specific permissions, which is really easily available through the portal, for it to fetch the data from a different subscription to capture that and display that in your NPM dashboards. So I will have a lot more documentation coming up when the page will have information on how you can sign up, how you can get whitelisted. This is going to be a public preview initially, and then we'll make sure that we take the feedback and then we can build on top of that and then eventually make it a GA product.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Paresh. Look forward to that. Give it a try when you see it. You need to have an OMS workspace. So you can try it, I think, in the workspace has to be in a specific region for the preview. Does it, Paresh? I think it has to be in West U.S. or
Miami. Yeah, West Central U.S. is where you have to create the workspace ID. The Express Route circuit and your connection resources can be anywhere else in the world.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. So look out for this, guys. I see a question in the IM from Jorge, who says, regarding Express Route unlimited connections to different VNets, is VNet to VNet traffic charge? It is not. If two VNets are connected to one Express Route circuit, whether it's unlimited or not, its traffic is not charged. It is charged when it exits the Express Route connection towards the customer's network. Quickly moving to the shifting gears. Thanks a lot, Paresh. Thanks for your time this morning. Appreciate that. Performance. This is quite the major announcements we've made at Ignite. We're already pretty fast in the cloud computing or cloud networking world. Now we're even faster. We were able to achieve 30 gigabits per second from VM to VM. We're enabling accelerated networking for more VM SKUs, and DPDK partner enablement is being made there. Accelerated networking was already there. accelerated networking is the usage of SRIOV technology, which I think stands for single root IO virtualization, which gives the NIC to the VM. So the VM has directly access to the NIC as opposed to going through some hypervisor networking kind of thing. And it makes it go significantly faster. So what we're able to do is achieve those kinds of speeds. Now, we had some challenges to have actual, I guess, NVA or network virtual appliance vendors be able to get to those speeds. So even before the 30 gigabits per second announcements, their top speed was still 25 gigs, which is very decent. Yet it wasn't possible. It was not possible for folks that did not integrate those this SRIOV technology into their own drivers of those vendors to be able to reach anywhere close to those. So there is development that has happened, plus the data plane data kit is in my understanding of it. I'm not a developer, but is an API that allows packets to be accessed at the user space instead of the kernel space and still be able to do it at very, very high speed. So I'm super excited to have with us A10 Networks, who are going to be talking us through what they have done, and specifically in that field with their vThunder appliance in Azure. So I think you're, are you, can you hear us?
Hey, can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you, Olivier, for the opportunity to talk today.
Absolutely.
We are excited to be here. I'm Saurabh Sureka, Senior Product Manager for Software Cloud at A10 Networks. And I also have Jeevan Sharma, who's the Senior Solutions Architect, and Leah McLean, who's the Senior Marketing Manager for Strategic Alliances. If you have any questions, please feel free to use the chat window. You know, we will take questions as part of the talk today. We have a couple of very cool demos for the audience. You know, at Ignite last month, we demoed the world's first network virtual appliance, NVA, running at 30 Gbps in public cloud. A short call out to the developers, the engineering teams, you know, they were working across six different locations to get this in line in a very short time. So thank you to the engineering teams. We demonstrated high-performance server load balancing, which is the ADC service, as part of the demo. While this solution is still in developer preview phase, we continue to add support for new services. Since Ignite, we have added support for running multiple gigabits of encrypted traffic, site-to-site VPN service connecting on-premise data centers to Azure Cloud, and we'll have a demo on that as well today. This is actually a proof point of high-performance architecture for Azure accelerated networking and A10's ACoS platform. And, you know, I would like to invite any partner or customers who would want to benefit from it. So if you aren't familiar with A10 Networks, we were founded in 2004 with the vision to build a high-performance platform for network and security services. Depending on the telco service provider, the public cloud provider, or enterprise, there's a good chance that your packets touch A10 hardware and software appliances. Our appliances are at the heart of your application's performance and security. So at the perimeter, we provide multi-vector DDoS detection and mitigation in conjunction with real-time threat intel from third-party partners. Almost 80% of the traffic today is SSL, and it creates a blind spot for application-level threats. We have SSLi service that centrally decrypts and inspects SSL traffic. It integrates really well with, you know, URL filtering. So if there are some classified, sensitive data that should not be decrypted, you can URL filter those. We are also known for our enterprise seasoned L4, L7 load balancer with deep programming hooks, global server load balancing, and WAF. In service provider segment, we are the leaders for carrier grade NAT, both for IPv4 and IPv6 networks, as well as data center firewall solutions. We've been a Microsoft partner listed on Azure Marketplace for several years now. For our customers, We also provide easy to deploy ADC and security templates for ADFS, Skype, Exchange, and GSLV. So talking about the A10 and Microsoft collaboration, you know, when we talk to our customers, they are either building new solutions or looking to migrate their workloads to Azure clouds. They like the availability to connect to multiple Azure regions spread throughout the US and world. And you know, they're looking for a secure encrypted pipe for connecting on-prem data centers to Azure. You know, they serve a multitude of traffic types, you know, be it video content, IoT, SSL. And really, you know, the requirements that we keep hearing from our customers for the NVA is to have that high bandwidth encryption capability for site-to-site encryption. Also have something, you know, which complements the Azure services. You know, deep level L4, L7 application load balancing type of service. SSL termination, AEM, certificate management. So the idea is to have this high-performant NVA, which can consolidate a lot of these services and leverage the best of the infrastructure, both in public and private clouds. We also have microservices-based controller, which is called the Harmony Controller, that provides for hybrid cloud management, visibility, and intelligent analytics for the application needs. Next slide, please. So talking about our collaboration with the Microsoft Accel team, it's only a few months old. As Olivia mentioned, you know, the two performance boosters that Microsoft Azure provides is SRIOV, which is, you know, single root IO virtualization that allows you to access the underlying infrastructure, and Data Plane Development Kit, DPDK, that provides you with network I/O optimization techniques. So it provides for a very fast packet processing capability at the VM layer. So what we did as part of this collaboration is we ported our ACoS platform to benefit from the improvements as part of this Azure stack. And the result of, you know, as a result of porting this platform, network I/O is no longer a bottleneck. And all the network and security services that are built on top of this platform can easily be ported into Azure. We've also incorporated the multi-NIC feature from Azure networking. It allows the VM to have multiple interfaces. So essentially, the combination of all this, you know, what we see is excellent performance improvement, you know, more than 10x performance improvement in throughput, as well as PPS and significantly reduced latency and jitter. So with that, I would like to take you through the demos. Jeevan, if you're online, you know, and especially I would like to say that, you know, if you're a car enthusiast, this is like the Hennessy Venom GT moment of networking. Jeevan,
you're on mute. Now you should be, we should hear you.
Thank you. Okay, can everyone hear me?
Absolutely.
Perfect, thank you. So thanks, Saurav. So I'll just walk you guys through two demos today. So we have prepared these two demos. The first one is about the performance in load balancing that is achieved in this Azure cloud. And the second one is around the site-to-site, point-to-point VPN tunnel, IPsec tunnel, encrypted traffic. So in this one, as Saurav mentioned, we have leveraged a couple of enhancements from Microsoft side, the accelerated networking. We are using SRIOV, we are using DPDK, and then we are using the multi-NIC feature. So first time for the NVA, the network virtualized appliance that we have. So our A10 VM that's running in this Azure cloud, it's called the vThunder or the Virtual Thunder. This is a very quick high level overview of the topology. So we have a client side and we have a server, And so the idea here is to pass the traffic between the client and the server and see what kind of throughput or performance that we can realize by using the accelerated networking from Microsoft. So here the A10 load balancer is acting like is working as a load balancer and going to and it So what it does is we have configured a virtual service here where the clients connect to, and then the it takes the traffic and load balances to the server farm and returns the traffic. Next slide, please. So we with the using this multi-NIC and accelerated networking, we were able to achieve 30 gigs of throughput with the A10 Thunder vThunder or a VM, with a VM, which was significant. I'm going to just run through the demo next. Next slide, please, Oliver. So here in this demo, you're going to see that how we achieved this 30 gig throughput or 28.8 gig throughput. So this is a simple topology overview. So client on this is the configuration. Here you see two interfaces. One interface is facing the client side. The other interface is facing the server side. We have a NAT pool configured to ensure that the return traffic always goes through our appliance, even if the networking, even if those have default gateways pointing to a router. Then this is where I have the client and server. So we use IPERF to achieve this kind of throughput here in this. So the client and servers are sending traffic. You can see that you can see that we achieved like 28.8 gigs of throughput using this accelerated networking, which is on a 30 gig link, is almost line rate. The next one, please. Next, I'm going to show you the IPsec VPN point-to-point tunnel. We used we used AES 256 encryption. We used the SHA-1. And in this case, what we had was in this setup, as you see, there's a public. We have our private data center, and we have one of the A10 appliances sitting in the private data center, and the other one is the A10 vThunder, which is residing in the Microsoft Azure cloud. So this is especially for customers who have a private data center and a public data center. And then, of course, when you're trying to send encrypted traffic over the public internet, the real challenge is really having a VPN endpoint or a VPN gateway in the public cloud, which can do a couple of gigs of throughput, really, of encrypted traffic, right? So this is where, again, this multi-NIC feature helped us achieve 3.59 gigs. So we have the topology is very simple. We have a client. We have two VMs on the two endpoints. On the one in the private data center and one on the in the Azure cloud. They need to exchange data, and this data has to pass through the point-to-point tunnel between the two A10 devices. So the major performance was 3.59 gig again. Go to the next slide, please. So that's the demo. Let's go through the demo. So in this one, this is the Microsoft Azure Resource Manager, and you have the A10 vThunder appliance running in this, as you can see. So I'll do a show version here. You see that we have a couple of interfaces here, and we have we are using the this is the Hyper-V running on Hyper-V platform. This is my IPsec configuration. It's a point-to-point tunnel between the two A10 devices. Then here you'll see that when we send the traffic, so here I start the traffic from one end. And then on the other end, and we'll see how much throughput we are able to achieve. So this traffic returns for about 30 seconds in this case, and we'll measure the performance to see. Okay, now here you see a couple of CPUs. So we have 10 CPUs on this system. One of them is dedicated for the control plane. Then we have 8 CPUs for data handling, and two CPUs for I/O, network I/O. So that's how we are able to achieve this kind of throughput. So as you know, that encrypted traffic definitely puts a lot of load on the CPUs. So let's see how much throughput we get to. So this is just running, and the test is finished. And we see that we achieved 3.59 gigabits of throughput, encrypted throughput through the A10 devices. Yeah, and again, note that this is public internet, so all the data is going through the internet, where the SLA is literally, there's no SLA to say, okay, how much throughput we can achieve. So with that, next slide, please. So with that, let me pass it on to Leah. Hey, Leah, you want to talk about the next steps?
Sure. Thank you, Jeevan, and hi, everyone. So just to recap, if you would like to find out more about our Virtual Thunder appliances, they are available in the Azure Marketplace. And to read more about this initiative that we're doing with Microsoft Azure and on accelerated networking, you can check out the blog post from both A10 and the Microsoft side when we officially talked about this at Ignite a couple weeks ago. And should you have any questions, you can feel free to reach out to either myself or our VP of Strategic Alliances, Gunter Rice, and we're happy to help with any questions you may have or any information you may need following this meeting.
Well, thanks a lot, Leah. Thank you, Sora and Jeevan. It was great demos. I like to see those big numbers. We've been waiting to see such numbers for some time. Again, that's the recap of what we've announced at Ignite. That doesn't show what we've accomplished last year because, well, it's last year. Time goes fast. We're doing so many things. But we are really advancing, I think, the networking platform on public clouds. And I think the demos that we've just seen are a testament to that. We were able to achieve things that were unimaginable not so long ago. And we're so happy where we got. And the roadmap for the future is equally interesting. So stay tuned. On a personal note, I will be going on father paternity leave. So the next episode, stay tuned for the schedules. We'll probably send an announcement with scheduling updates if need be. And that's it. So. Thanks for your time. Thanks for the congratulations. If you guys have questions, I haven't followed the IM thoroughly. I don't know if there are some questions that haven't been answered. I'm unmuting the audience right now. So if you want to get off mute and if you have a question for any one of us here, now would be a great time. And if not...
Yep.
Hearing someone.
I want to know how are the global VNIC tiering charges happen.
Can you speak closer to the microphone? It's pretty hard for me to understand.
I just want to know how are the charges for the global VNIC tiering.
You want to know what the charges are?
Yeah. How does it charge?
Well, it charges per gigabyte outbound and per gigabyte inbound, exactly like the local VNet peering. It's just that the prices are not the same, but it's the same mechanics. Any other?
Hi, this is Uday. Hi, this is Uday.
Yes. Hi.
Hi. So the accelerator networking, which we talked about with the A10 appliance, Thunder VM, can I use with other vendors? You mentioned that looking at DBTK, the partner enablement, which will provide the throughput of 30 Gbps. So I will be able to use this capability to the single NVA device to maintain all my workloads in my Azure VM. Is that my understanding right?
Yeah, well, your understanding has to be, I guess, around these lines. If the vendor that you're working with, if it's not A10, whoever they are, if they do support DPDK And if they do support SRIOV, or if they only support SRIOV, because they don't have to do both. They can do SRIOV only, or SRIOV and DPDK, or maybe just DPDK. I'm not a dev, so I don't really know if it can only be DPDK. That said, when they do enable that on their code, whatever the result will be depends on how optimized their code is. And they are the only people who can tell you. The fabric will limit them to 30 gigabits per second. If they're able to attain 30 gigs, is up to them. And hopefully many people can get to those kinds of numbers. It's up to the vendor. So you need to speak with the vendor. The thing is, what we're announcing is we're opening up the doors for this, and people like A10 were quickly able to get that kind of performance. So that's very positive.
Okay. So just a small clarification on what you said. Thank you. The DBTK, is that, I got what is the, you know, the SRIOV, but what is the DBTK partner enablement?
Well, we are supporting DPDK. I'm not a developer, so it's a bunch of APIs that allows, my understanding is it allows to access packets in the user space instead of the kernel space. But beyond that, dpdk.org, I think, is your best friend, and you will find pretty much, let me just check if it's this. I believe that's what the, it's dpdk.org. I'll paste the URL in the IM. If you want to check it out, you will see exactly what it entails.
Okay.
It's a whole bunch of libraries.
Yeah, thank you. Thing. Just to finalize this, I got now the accelerator network on DBDK supported by the vendor, the NVA vendor, so I can use a 30 gigabits of throughput, and I can use a single appliance to manage my all Azure workloads, right?
The answer to that depends on your vendor. If you're using Checkpoint, the answer to is Checkpoint able to achieve 30 gigabits per second can only be answered by Checkpoint.
Okay.
Checkpoint has to integrate the code. Checkpoint has to integrate the code for SRIOV for DPDK to do their tests and tell you, here's the performance we're able to get out of a single machine. And if not, you can always load balance them using our standalone balancer that I talked about earlier, and just spin as many ones you want in parallel to get to that kind of performance. If you need 30 gigs, if you need 20, if you need 50, if you need more than 30, you're going to need to have more than one appliance in parallel.
Great.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Any other questions? There's still a lot of folks on the call. We're about 60. If you want to, you can get off mute. You can ask questions in the IM if there's more questions you have, happy to answer them. Please speak up if the questions you've had weren't answered. Well, if not, I was going to say I'm going to give you back time, but I won't, because the call was scheduled to last up until exactly now. So thank you so much, everyone. Thanks you for your presence, and thanks to the presenters as well. And enjoy your weekends.